On today's episode, we talk with an animal protector named Ingrid, who has been a friend of mine for many years. Typically, I present these conversations with little or no editing, because I just like to let the subjects talk in their own way, on their own time. I don't want to alter their way of telling their story. And this is the first piece I recorded in the series. And in preparing it for actually putting it up on the podcast, I felt like there was some content missing in our conversation because we both knew the content. You know, when you're talking with someone who you know well, you kind of skip over the parts that you know each other remembers. And so I'm making some additions. There's a dog in the background, of course, making some additions to fill in some of the gaps along the way in this conversation. To begin with, I want to explain the custom of bringing supplies to Cuba when you travel there. If you are a first-time tourist, you'll hear that you should bring things like crayons for children, toothbrushes, soaps, things like that. And then on my first trip back in 2000, I did bring some of those items and ran out really quickly. I was in the middle of the street passing my last crayons out to children and suddenly, of course, running out and dealing with children that were very, very upset. So when I returned years later, after Obama made it easier for travel there directly from the U.S., I was traveling with friends who were all involved in dog rescue work, and I knew we would inevitably encounter some dogs and think about the veterinary supplies we have easy access to here in the U.S. So we planned ahead, and we each brought a full suitcase of donated veterinary supplies, flea and tick medication, wormers, sutures, things like that. We contacted a group working with animals in Havana. And for me, it became an annual thing to go to Havana for the film festival in December and bring along a suitcase or two of donations for vets and animal protectors and also additional items for humans, too. I always say that animals connect people. And so in doing this, bringing these donations, I began to meet a lot of people, including Ingrid, who lives in Kabarian. Hopefully I'm saying that correctly. It's a small town on the coast of Cuba near the Keys. I visited her and her husband and child in Santa Clara in December of 2019. And we kept in touch throughout the pandemic when things got very grim for Cuba due to the combination of the pandemic, their already weak economy, and the complications of U.S. trade sanctions. For much of the first year of the pandemic, travel was still possible. So at various points, I had a ticket to bring supplies that I'd gathered from many donors. But each time the flights were canceled at the last minute, or the return flight was canceled before the outbound flight. So in 2022, I finally arrived with suitcases that had been packed and sitting by my front door for almost 3 years. To deliver these supplies, including some toys for her child and others, I hired a driver in Havana to bring me to Santa Clara, then took a local cab to Kabarian. I got in late afternoon. We went for dinner at a pizza spot and walked through the town. It was gorgeous. Like much of Cuba, many of the great old buildings are in disrepair or ruins, including several large movie houses that now stand empty. As we passed, Ingrid said hello to, it seemed like, everybody in the street that we passed, every dog. And when she saw some teenage boys with a snake, she walked over, spoke with them, grabbed the snake from them, and returned it to the, you know, bush where they had found it. You know, it's the kind of town where everybody knows everyone. And the next morning, we met for this conversation before I headed to Trinidad and then back to Havana. Here we go.
And this is the first recording I'm doing for what hopefully is a series of conversations with people in Cuba about life in Cuba now, to help people who haven't ever been here know what's going on and what we may all have in common, even though we come from different places, but also what we might not know or understand about how things go in Cuba. So can you introduce yourself?
Of course. Well, thank you very much for letting me be the first one in the interview. My name is Ingrid, and yeah, we'll be talking about our culture and what we do here. I live in Caibarien. It's a small town in the center of the island of Cuba. It's a fisherman town, and we got a really nice seawall, and people mostly live on fishing and some hotels that we have nearby, Santa Maria's hotels.
And you grew up here?
Yeah, I grew up here. All my life I've been here. 34 years already.
34 years?
Yeah.
You're so old. No. We met years ago, and then just to give a little bit of context, one of the things we have in common is our love of animals, mm-hmm. Which is one of the things that I think, you know, I love animals, but the other thing I love about animals is that it's something that bonds you to people that you might not otherwise have any connection to, or you might think you have no connection.
Yeah, right.
And so that's how we first came into contact with each other, was through animals and projects that you've been doing.
I think this is the third time we've met, right?
I know, but it feels like we've known each other longer.
Oh, yeah, because we often text yes.
So tell me, tell me more, I guess, about how you got involved with working with animals.
Well, that was my passion for so many years, since I was little. I was like, when you have this dream that you have of being an animal protector, of being able to rescue animals and stuff like that, and I was able to make it come true. And we are a big team of people that work together. We rescue, we deworm and sterilize, and it's been amazing. It's been fulfilling, you know.
But in Cuba in general, there's not a lot there's not a lot of access to many things.
We've been totally able to do this because of the donations that we receive from people, from mostly Canadians and American people.
Can you talk more just about what's life like for animals here in Cuba? I mean, there are veterinarians and things like that, but are people able to go?
Oh, yeah. We do have clinics for the animals, and people mostly take cats and dogs there. And of course, the cocheros, you know, the men that they use these horses for the carriages, they take them to the vets as well. And it's, they do care about the animals here, you know. People love their pets and everything, but it's hard to get access to some meds and some treatments and stuff. And then there's strays.
Right.
You know, there are so many strays, and which is so sad.
I think that's maybe something that people, particularly from the United States, would find difficult to understand or to accept in a way. You know, in the U.S. people have their pets, and a lot of people take their cat or dog to the vet, you know, at least twice a year just for a checkup. They have relatively easy access to, you know, monthly dewormer, flea medicine, spay neuter.
Yeah.
All of these things are a little bit harder to come by here, right?
Oh, yes. It's not easy to find flea tick medication at all. The warmers, like the good kind, we don't get easily if it's not donated. And what people do have here is like ivermectin, the Cuban one, which is good. And that's what people use, you know, what they can get for their pets. But you were talking about sterilization. We have been, you know, when we started this, all of us, we had so many ideas, like having shelters and this and that. And with time, with the years, we've realized that it's really hard to keep a shelter going well, you know, because of the lack of food, the lack of meds, and to have so many dogs, like, for example, even if you don't have that many dogs, like 15, 20 dogs in a place, you should have them vaccinated, and that costs a lot of money. When you, those vaccines, you know, like the penta,
right?
The one that's for the five diseases. And we've learned with time that we needed to focus on sterilizing first. It's the most important thing to do, because if you sterilize a dog, a stray dog, for example, that female dog is not gonna give birth on the street anymore. She's not gonna be beaten up. She's her puppies are not gonna die, and she will have a better way of surviving. You sterilize a stray dog and you deworm her, and you know these strays are so strong. They have a good health, you know. If you just give them a little push, they're gonna make it, and they're gonna be able to, like the way we see it, our the people that we have this group, the way we see it, it's even better concentrated right now. If you are aware of the situation that we live in, You have to know that it's better deworming and sterilizing first. And then, if we can make it better for the animals, if we can control the overpopulation, maybe we can have the shelters, maybe we can do, you know, other things. Though we do adoptions, sometimes we can get a dog and we can find an adoption, but it's really hard.
Yeah.
Because of the situation that we live in.
Because people don't have enough resources for themselves.
Yeah.
Especially now,
even for themselves, so it's hard. And also, a stray dog that you sterilize and you deworm, if you get these donations, you know, like this, all of us in Cuba that we get this amazing help, you give that dog the possibility of being on the street, finding a place where they can eat, because so many people give their leftovers to them, you know?
Right.
So it's like you give them a better chance to survive and to get food if they're on the street, sterilized and dewormed, you know?
I think that's, in the United States, people think that there should be no animals on the street, which, I mean, ideally that's true. But we also have shelters that are filled with animals that have no homes, that wait and wait and wait trying to find a home. Whereas here in Cuba, there are animals that don't seem to have a home, but they sort of belong to a neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So many. Every stray has some houses that people where people take care of them and give them stuff, food and leftovers and that. Thing is, the ideal thing is to have no stray dogs or cats and have shelters, you know, with like a little amount of animals and a small amount of animals, and you can find home for them. But you have to be realistic.
Yeah.
You have to see where you're living, how what the conditions are, and then you have to see what's best to do. Even if you would love to have just shelters, but right now you take 20 dogs off a street, you make a shelter. And you take care of those 20 dogs. What about all the others on the street?
Right.
Like if you're getting some resources, I think you should better concentrate in trying to deworm and sterilize. Sterilize. We did over more than 700 sterilizations in our town. for free. Thanks to those donations that we got, and mostly to poor, to people that couldn't afford to sterilize their dogs. And we also had to do a lot of work by convincing those people that sterilizing was good. Because we got to sterilize lots of strays, which was hard, because we had to take care of them after that for some days, even before, give them baths and the antibiotics, and then take care of them until they were ready. Then you have to find them again to remove the stitches. It's hard work. But also sterilized the dogs of that had owners, because those owners, you know what they do when their dogs or cats give birth? They put them on the street. So it's the same thing, you know?
Yeah. How do you convince them?
Oh, a lot of talk. We don't get tired of telling people how important it is to sterilize female dogs and male dogs too. Because you have a male dog, he can be straight or not. The dog can be straight or not.
But he can produce litters through other
women. Yeah, but he goes out. And then if that female dog has a tumor that can be, you know, transmitted by the intercourse, then that dog is going to have that thing, that cancer, you know. And also they go to the street, and then there's a female dog, 20 dogs after her. A truck can run over them. People get upset and they kick them. They mistreat them, you know. And then after that female dog is going to have to suffer, giving birth to lots of puppies, and maybe being alone and without any food.
Can you talk about how you do the sterilization events? I know you do something where they get just like one stitch or two.
Oh, it's quite easy.
Which, again, like, you'd think that we might be familiar with this in the United States, but it's not done there.
No. They do it
multiple...
They both work, but, you know, I'm not a veterinarian. I'm just an animal protector. But in Cuba, most veterinarians, they do it by the side. They say it's better because the muscles there... with the movement of the dog is, they have the muscles there. It's better for the healing and
because it's not the abdomen.
It's not the abdomen.
And it's like a 1-inch incision.
And it's only one.
We're getting
1 inch. It's only
signals from your friend who's sitting off to the side.
Yeah, and then. So it's only one stitch. It's quite easy, and most veterinarians do it. And it's very well. If it's a good surgeon, it's a very easy procedure, you know. And then you just give antibiotics for the last for 3 days with long action, you know. And it's wonderful. It's so easy. I say the mutts. We mostly have mutts, you know. They are so strong. Their health system is really strong and resistant, and they don't need so much. They just need a little push. Like, you sterilize them, you deworm them, and they're gonna be fine, you know. And then I keep dreaming of the day that we're not gonna have them on the street, and we're gonna have the shelters where we can just go there and find a pet for our home. I hope so.
I mentioned at the start of the podcast that I had met Ingrid and her friends in Santa Clara before the pandemic back in 2019. On that trip, in addition to my own case of donations that I was carrying, I agreed to bring several cat traps that had been waiting to be picked up in Havana for them. When I offered to bring them, they kept checking back with me in the days before I left to travel to them. They kept checking back to see if I was sure that I wanted to do this, which I didn't really understand why they were so concerned about me agreeing to bring these items that they needed. But I'd never traveled far outside of Havana before, so I didn't really know how complicated it can be. I hired a driver in Havana to bring me to Santa Clara, which is about 3 hours away. I got there on a Monday evening after dark with, you know, this giant suitcase of donations, my own personal items, and then these cat traps that were incredibly heavy, it turned out, and they were tied together with twine, which when I posted a photograph on Facebook, my friends in the U.S. were all complaining about the twine and saying it would be so much easier if it was connected with zip ties, but zip ties don't exist in Cuba. So that evening, I walked over to the Central Park in Santa Clara, and it was like a dream, I have to say, because it was, you know, warm out but dark, and there was literally an orchestra playing in the center of the park, and children taking donkey cart rides around the park, and families gathered together, and it was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. Then in the morning, Ingrid met me, and we carried the suitcase and the metal cages to another part of town where we waited for a group taxi, which is really a cart that fits eight people pulled by a motorcycle. And this is a part of Cuba where it's also common to see just horse-drawn public transit. We traveled as far as we could on that little motor cab. Then we began walking the rest of the way up a hill to a house where her friends were waiting. And now I understood why people were surprised that I was willing to carry more with me on this trip. But also doing this, you know, for me was a way of seeing a completely different side of Cuban life. When we got to the house, I met her friends and their dogs and spent the afternoon hearing all about their very industrious efforts in animal welfare. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention is that Cuba only recently introduced any real animal protection laws when they created what essentially is the first constitution, I believe, just a couple years ago. So before that happened, groups like this, you know, worked on their own, but really also had to work almost undercover because there wasn't any perceived legitimacy to the work they were doing, I guess you could say. And so one of the things that I've noted in subsequent trips is that that now that there are animal protection laws, a lot of these people are far more open about the work that they are able to do. And so that's a great thing to see. Previously, there was only one organization that could officially do this work. And so anybody working outside of that organization was sort of an outlier in many ways. But this change in the laws seems to have empowered more people to be more vocal and more active in dealing with the issues around animal protection and caring for working animals as well as pets and strays.
Can you talk a little bit more about this town growing up here, what it was like? You went to school. You speak English, obviously, very well. You also speak French, which I'm very jealous about. what was it like growing up here, and what has changed over the years for people here? I mean, we were walking around yesterday, just yeah. So people know, and you were talking about like the theaters that are closed down and things like that.
Oh yeah, I showed you those movies, and yeah, we did have three nice movies that are closed now. They're completely destroyed, unfortunately. And yes, this was always a small town where people would just fish, and I think we had 4,000 citizens, or something. 40, I'm sorry. 40,000 citizens. And, well, when I learned English because I took private lessons when I was very young. And then I had the opportunity of going to work at the Keys as a waitress.
Uh-huh.
So I got to improve my English with the tourists there. And I learned French by talking to people there. And it was really good. And
what kind of community is here? I know people just from walking around. I know everybody seems to know each other because it's a small town. What do people do? You know, I mean, I guess I'm trying to think of what questions people out there might have or might wonder about. You know, like, what's a week in the life of this town? Like, are there events that people go to? Is there, you know, are there cultural things happening? It's a small town, so there's not necessarily a lot of that.
We're not having many, many cultural things anymore. It's been complicated after COVID.
Right, and that's the other thing that I want to sort of talk about for everybody.
It's things have changed a lot, and also a lot of people have left, you know. There's been a massive
exodus.
Exodus of people. And we used to have more cultural activities here. That's why we like to go to Santa Clara so much, which is 50 kilometers away. And there are more activities there, for sure.
What about shopping, like getting food, clothes, things like that? I mean, that just so you know, I mean, I will partially answer that question and say that's difficult everywhere in Cuba right now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there are some things, like talking about food, there are some things that you can get with Cuban markets, like particular farmers or something. Some people fish, and you can get some fish because they, you know, because we live in a town where we have an ocean. But, like, for example, food. Right now we have these MLC stores where you can, if you have the currency, the USD currency, which is mostly sent from relatives that you have outside or friends or whatever, you can get access to these stores and you can find them. You can buy chicken or beef or all the hygiene products like detergent and soap and stuff like that.
The MLC card that she's referring to is a sort of a money card that can be used in certain government stores, but it has to be loaded with U.S. dollars. And can only be loaded with that from people that are off the island. So it's very complicated. And similarly, although you can use it in certain physical stores, there's also some websites that it can be used on. Or I guess more particularly, there are websites that people that are off the island can use to send products to their friends and family on the island. It's all very confusing to me. The online grocery that is a recent pandemic era development in Cuba is one of those things that I can't understand really how it works at all, because it's so distinctly Cuban in the way it works. But essentially, it's a website like Amazon, sort of, where people that do not live in Cuba can go and pay U.S. dollars to purchase items that theoretically are sent to their friends or family in Cuba. A lot of it is food stuff, but I think also sometimes electronics are available, things like that. But the curious part for me and for some of my friends in Cuba is that you know, these are items that they cannot get in Cuban supermarkets because there are shortages or they're, you know, because of the embargo, things like that. But these items, when they're ordered, aren't sent from off the island to the recipient. They're actually sitting in a warehouse somewhere in Cuba, waiting for someone off the island to buy it to give to somebody on the island. So my friends who live in Cuba don't understand why they can't just buy it themselves if they have the money. But even if they have the money, they are not allowed to buy from that website themselves. It can only be bought by somebody off the island. And that's one of those things that just is what it is in the world of life in Cuba.
And then the clothing, well, there's lots of Cubans that travel abroad, and they have these businesses of bringing stuff, you know, and
yeah,
and they go get they go and buy all kinds of shoes and clothing, and then they come here and they have these private shops.
But nobody, I mean, there's not like a clothing factory.
Oh yeah.
Is there?
They do have like 3 stores here in our town.
But a place that actually makes clothing anywhere.
I wouldn't know.
It seems like, I mean, I should check on this myself, but it seems like that's one of the things that just doesn't get produced here. So then that's why the clothing has to come from some other place.
Everything like that comes from another place.
Yeah. I think that's one of those things that people outside of here don't even imagine, you know? Yeah, no.
The clothing comes from another place, from other countries always.
So a lot of people who, you know, a lot of people, especially if they come from the United States, are, you know, curious about Cuban life. A lot of people know that it might be a good thing to bring things with them when they come. Some people don't know that at all until they get here. And some people wonder, like, what's the most useful thing to possibly bring. You know, there are all these lists that circulate on the internet, but sometimes I've seen some Cuban people that are like, well, you look like you don't need to bring that stuff. We have that stuff. And I'm sure it changes from year to year what's needed, but what would be the most useful things for people to bring?
Well, I would say, basically, I would say that anything you bring to a Cuban person, you're going to be giving him a good help, giving that person a good help. I would say hygiene products, clothing. For example, Cubans don't care for worn clothes, you know. They would be happy with it. Like worn shoes or clothes, or they would be, it would help. If it doesn't fit you, you can give to your
sister, somebody will get it.
To your neighbor, because the good thing we have is we like sharing. You know, we have kind hearts, Cubans. We like to help each other, and I would say hygiene products, mostly clothing, shoes, yeah, stuff like that.
Okay, is there anything else that you would want to share? About,
I would say, don't be shy. Yeah, because you know when I used to work at the hotels, I remember that we had lots of Canadians. We didn't get Americans. I've spoken with some Americans in my life, but not precisely at the hotels. And they would sometimes they would say. But I'm so worried that I can offend someone if I give him soap or a toothbrush. And I would say, no, don't you think so? And you're going to be giving that person a good help. There's been an amazing improvement in the way Cubans' lives because of the help we've had because of tourism.
Yeah.
Like it's totally changed because of everything that's come into the country by so many people that wanted to share what they had, but they didn't, maybe they didn't need anymore, or they also just wanted to share, you know. Anything you
It's funny because the toothbrush is the thing that I see people saying, don't bring a toothbrush.
Oh, yeah. No.
People are like, we can get a toothbrush. Don't bring a toothbrush.
No.
But you're saying anything is fine.
I mean, you could get a toothbrush, but it's not easy. Anyway, it's not easy to find. So it's... toothbrushes, whatever, and soaps and stuff that you can bring, deodorant and stuff like that you can bring to Cubans. You're gonna be of huge help. The people that have stuff they don't need to use anymore, they're not heavy and they want to bring to Cuba, you can find people to give it to.
Yeah.
You can just walk on the street and just maybe find someone that you look at the person and you think it's gonna be good for that.
The first
person.
Time I came here, which was like 22 years ago, I brought just a few things, including crayons, and was like trying to figure out like how do I give these out. And I just was walking through a neighborhood, I think in Old Havana, and like pulled them out, and people came running.
That must have been a big
lots
joy.
Of kids. Kids yeah. surrounded me. There was a woman like on a balcony who lowered a basket on a string
for you to put some in.
Yeah, yeah. And then I felt bad because everything was gone so quickly, and I was I could have brought so much more.
Yeah, you know? Crayons is something that is always going to be good to give to kids, and you can go to the places that you know that really need it. You know, because some people do have. Access to some stuff because we have lots of relatives outside,
right,
and friends and this and that, but there are neighborhoods where you can go and you can see that people really need the stuff and then find those places, and those places is where you deliver the stuff. And
yeah, it seems like everybody's having some degree of struggle because of the economy, especially post-pandemic and all of that, but there's still like a range of disparity between like some people that have some help coming from relatives outside, but not everybody has a relative outside to help them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very.
It's gotten worse.
Difficult.
Really.
Yeah. Yeah. So your words to people are, if you're curious, come. I mean, I feel like maybe we should say also, in spite of the. Difficulties we're talking about, it's still a wonderful place to visit.
Oh, it is. Cubans are nice. We're nice people. We like talking, and even those who don't speak English, for example, they don't care. We can people can communicate by you know. Like,
I tell this to people all the time. Like, I don't speak Spanish, but I'll end up having like an hour long conversation with someone on the street who doesn't speak English, and because people want to. People really want to talk, and it's like they don't, you know, other places if you don't know the language people are like whatever, but here people are like, we can find a way of talking about
of course,
and people are so curious and want to know, you know, our opinions of certain things.
Yeah,
or what's going on in the United States, because the United States has gotten crazy in its own way.
Yeah.
And there's still music to come listen to here, and
we have good music and we love dancing,
and it's beautiful.
I wanted to say something about that, because in spite of all of the lacks and that we have, and I want to say something for my people. Some people think that maybe because Cubans have these needs, they're only interested in the stuff they can get or whatever from people. No, we are truly nice and friendly, and we like to have fun and to gather around with friends and take a guitar and go somewhere and sit and just sing and just have fun, because that's something that's inside us. I've known many cultures, many cultures, and I know people are not the same everywhere. Some people are more reserved and they don't like sharing so much, and they don't like smiling or just, yeah, and you gotta respect that, you know? But we are truly, truly friendly, and we like to party and have fun and share, and so it's worth coming to Cuba.
Yeah, definitely is. I keep coming back.
And a good thing we've always had is like someone has something here, and even if you don't have much, people share one with the other, And that is something that's so valuable.
Yeah. I think that's what makes it... I think that maybe is one of the things that people come and see and it inspires them.
Yeah.
So it might be a good place to sign off to finish our talk.
Yeah.
So thank you for being the first.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, Ken. Thank you so much for the opportunity.